The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Lamont Ugot Hawkins and A.D. Amorosi to the Free Library of Philadelphia. Probably,
I gotta
thank everybody for braving
the weather and terrible, ridiculous ice
and snow. Thanks for coming out.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to kick right into this. You write in Raw of getting out of the Park Hill projects as being the primary goal of why Wu-Tang Clan was birthed.
Oh yes, definitely. We are, you know, we were some project kids, man. We grew up in Brownsville. We was raised in the projects, man. We went from one project to another project to another project.
When did you sense though, how that would happen?
We all came together. What's up, G? We all came together for that cause, and our cause was, I can't even explain it. We all had the same similarities together. Like, you know, us, Ray, Ghost, all of us. We all just had that we wanted this rhyme and, you know, and hopefully this would take us up out of here, you know, and just that feeling that was going to be our way to get up out, you know, and we just kept it to ourselves and we always did it. Even though when people said we ain't Public Enemy, we wasn't Big Daddy Kane, we wasn't, you know, we got those
Big
two.
Big Daddy Kane.
We got those in the beginning, you know, the people saying you ain't this, you ain't that, you ain't going to make it, and you ain't going to do that, you know, so that's how we started.
You are, throughout the book, you managed to detail some very painful stories, especially, you know, you talk about death being always at your doorstep.
Yeah, and in the projects, that's what it is, man. You hear it on the news all the time. You know, at one time, all you heard was gunshots. You know what I mean? It changed after a certain time. In the beginning, it wasn't like that. You know what I mean? You had your gangs in Brooklyn. You had the Tomahawks and all that stuff in Brooklyn and all
right.
that. And all that, you know, gangs originated a lot in Brooklyn and stuff like that. But it wasn't really guns the way it really was until, like, later on.
But oddly enough, the first tale that you tell of a death, very poignant, it's of a woman jumping off of a building at 280 Park Hill Terrace.
That's right.
Finish the story for us. That was really caught me off guard.
Well, all right. It was a summer time, and the windows was open, and it was a commotion outside, and it's just people used to come out. Back then, you know, as kids, everybody used to be outside. Right now, it ain't the same as it was when I was growing up. You know, kids used to go out and play in the streets, and everybody used to be in the streets. It was no Nintendo, was no PlayStations, was none of that stuff. You know, you had your radio station, that was it, you know. But at the time, the lady, you know, whatever the commotion was, my mother just got me up and just we went outside. And to my announcer, she put me on the shoulders because there's so many people outside, and she was just on the roof and she was just threatening to jump. And, you know, we was just, I didn't know what was going on. I was about 5 years old.
Right.
I didn't know what was going on. I'm just sitting there watching it. And then, you know, all of a sudden she jumps. Well, she looked like she jumped. She might have slipped. Who knows? I mean, and she fell, hit the concrete, hit the gate, then went to the staircase, and that was it. It's like after that situation took place, it was like boom, 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 bam, boom. That was it. It was over. Then after that, paramedics came and did their thing, took out on the gurney, and that was the crowd dispersed, and that was that. You know, but it was still like amazing. Like wow, this was like this is a shocking moment. You know what I mean? And it was later on I realized what happened. Like, you know, as you grow older, you're like, man, I still remember when she, this lady did the thing like that. But that wasn't the first time somebody tried to jump off the roof of my projects. like a couple other people jumped off the roof too. You know what I mean? That was just the thing. People was just, sometimes people just get
desperation.
Fed.
Desperation.
Yeah, people just get fed and just jump off the roof.
You write in the book, only the pure of heart make it out of the ghetto. You choose, and ultimately you finish that phrase with the line, you choose righteousness over negativity. Is this, where does this come from? Is this part of your family's background? Is this your religion?
No, it's just something I saw. I seen real evil people. I know real, real hardcore evil motherfuckers, man. My money. I know some people. I told them, "You so evil that you can't die. You just won't die." I'm serious. I know people that have been shot mad times, and just, "You so evil, dude. You're not gonna die. Lord's gonna have you here. You're gonna be in pain for the rest of your life because you're just that fucking evil." You know what I mean? And then you got the people who are just so good, you know, that, you know, some people who are good at heart who died too, passed away on some fluke shit. You know what I mean? And then you got those in-between people that dance between the evil and then and dance on the good side. You know what I'm saying? And those seem to be the people I was talking about that really push the envelope. With a little bit of evil, and not too much, you know.
Right.
Not too much, you know, a little bit of evil and a little bit of good. A little bit of evil, a little bit of good. They make it right out of there for some apparent reason. And that's what I mean by pure heart. You know, it's just like, you're too evil, you're just going to be stuck. You're too nice, you might get hurt. But if you walk that line for some apparent, this is what I've seen. You walk that line, you can, for some apparent reason, it works.
Well, you actually, and you seemed to walk that line, though.
That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, you were really.
And that's what I'm talking about.
You were not a bad. You were, you know, you're not a bad guy.
I will bust my hammer if I had to, though. You know what I'm saying? That's where I grow up. That's how I grow up. I'm type of dude that, you know, I'm cool. I'm I'm good. But then you push that envelope, shit gonna get funky. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I go both ways like that. You know what I'm saying? And I had to learn that way from getting beat up and getting jumped when I was a kid and being bullied by certain things and getting taken advantage of as a kid. Then it comes to a certain point in life, you just don't take it no more. I know many kids who started off as nerds, I mean really good kids, and then turned into murderers. Out of nowhere, like what happened? Because he just got his cabin got pressurized so much, he got hurt, or he got to the point where he was like, you know, I'm tired of this shit, and he just started went crazy, and he just went bloodlust and just started going nuts, and people was, oh, here go. I remember little shorty who was young. That was little Den. Now he big Den now. You know what I mean? And that's big dude. Nigga, don't fuck with big Den because big Den will take your head off.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But when he was a kid, he was a good little dude, though. You know what I mean? And that's just how it is growing up in the hood, man. You know?
The first time that you spotted crack or spotted, it was an accident.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was an accident. Definitely.
That
was
you
an
just
accident.
Found. Do you mind talking about? Because it really, it's very comical because it really seems like, oh, what's this? I just tripped over some crack, and
it was three little envelopes. They come in little packages, wrapped in rubber bands. Somebody was selling, and they dropped it in the sewer, and I picked it up. And my friend was like, he knew what it was because his mom's was on drugs at the time. I didn't know that, you know what I mean? But his mom's was on drugs, so he picked it up. I said, yo, what the hell is this? He said, yo, you can get money for that. He didn't even tell me what it was. He just told me you can get money for it. So I was like, okay, how much you can get for it? He looked at it. He said, I could probably get like 300.
Right,
I said, 300. I said, word? I said, all right, do what you gotta do, bro. I think he's gonna be back like a week or something later on. He came back in 15 minutes. $300. I was like, word? That was a little $150 for him and $150 for me. So I was like, that was a pair of sneakers for me. You know, that was a little something for me. But that was like the introduction to being street poisoned. Because you can get street poisoned. And a lot of these kids running around here, you know, parents are like, what's going on? Like, what's going on with my kid? Your kid is getting street poisoned from many influences, either from direct drugs, influence from flashy money, cars, whatever. It looks good. And I call that street poisoning. That's what you got to save your kids from, you know, trying to get that poison up out of them. And then once they get that poison in them, woo, it's hell to get that shit up out of them. It's really a hard task to get that up out of them, you know?
You mentioned the gangs that would hang around the Chinese restaurants dressed in Kangol, Puma, and Adidas tracksuits. And you really
That was the Avenue Crew, the motherfuckers.
Right?
The mothers, those are motherfuckers.
Could you sense yourself, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you seem to be romanticizing them at the same time you seem to be keeping your distance.
Well, you got to understand something. Being little shorties in the hood, you're always going to look up to the adolescents. You know what I mean? Because you see them, right. They're wearing ballets, they're wearing little fly little mock necks and stuff like that. And you're like, yeah. And they're like, get out of here, shorty. You're like, fuck you, man. You know what I'm saying? And they next thing you know, you come back with some, you know, you're trying to befriend them, but they trying to come back and rebel you. But at the same time, they also was abusing you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like for instance, this dude named Jerry G. We used to play our video games. We used to be playing our video games. He'll just come in and just chop you in the back of the neck while you playing your video game. And then dig in your pockets and take your money. And like, yo, what you gonna do, shorty? What you gonna do? And you used to be like, you can't do shit, because that's Big Jerry G. You know what I'm saying? So we had to, then, you know, he get his little bit of money, then that'd be one day situation. Then we'd be sitting in the back playing with little mud cakes and little pies. We'd make it out of little shit. Because like I said, we didn't have no Nintendos, no Xboxes, and none of that. We had to come with our own.
Right.
We had to come with inspiration. We had to think of things to play with. So we used to play in the mud and playing the garbage. And, you know, that's what kids used to do back in the days. So we playing in the mud, doing all that stuff. All of a sudden, rocks start coming out of nowhere, busting me upside my head. Bah, bah, bah. Avenue fucking crew again. They just kept, you know, tormenting us as kids, you know what I'm saying? But that's what they used to do. They used to bully us. They called it, later on when I grew older, they was like, yeah, we had to make your shorties tough, you
right.
know what I'm saying?
Toughen them up.
Y'all had to toughen y'all up, because that's just how it be. And I used to be like, yo, man, y'all, they terrorized us, you know what I mean? It was just a war. Every time we see them, we had to run. We had to throw rocks at them, you know. Every time we have a little fun, they just come and crash our stuff, burn our shit down. You know, it's just how it was growing up, man.
As a kid, what are you listening to?
Oh, you mean music-wise?
Yeah.
On the radio at the time, no, Michael Jackson was definitely playing. Who else was playing? Peaches and Herb.
Peaches and Herb.
Minnie Riperton. Frankie Crocker was on the radio. Back then in New York City.
Right.
Was it El DeBarge, I think? Maybe he'd been out there back then. I forgot. Car Wash, what's it called?
Rolls Royce.
Yeah, Rolls Royce was on the radio. It was that time, man.
When do you hook up with, if I remember reading this correctly, Capadonna was the first Wu-Tang member you wound up befriending. When do you
nah,
go? Now?
Kappa was like way before Friends. I had pictures of Kappa at my seven-year-old birthday party, him and his brother. You know, Miss
So
Lynn,
then this his is mother, way, okay.
Yeah, his see, our mothers were, you know, community women.
Right.
It was community women. Community women, what I mean is they knew each other from the community, and they made sure, you know, Miss Linda know Mrs. Hawkins, and Mrs. Hawkins know Mrs. Woods, and Mrs. Woods know Linda. And, you know, that's how it was growing up in those days. You know what I mean? It was the whole hood knew your baby, you know?
So when does he, or when do the two of you, develop a beatbox and rap thing?
Well, me and Kappa have always had a relationship, you know what I mean, during the course of the time of years, we just always connected with each other. You know what I'm saying? The same way thing with Corey, with Raekwon. We always connected for some apparent reason. We were always just, you know, yo, what's up? Oh, yo. You know, that's just how it was. You know, certain kids you just gravitate to. And Kappa was one of them. Ray was one of them. Deck was one of them. Definitely Meth, you know. And that's basically the four from the hill. But Kappa's brother, his name was Shamgard. He was the best dresser in Park Hill.
How so?
I mean, he was immaculate dresser. I mean, like linens, fly shit. He just, you know, another level of dressing. You know what I mean? He was known to be one of the flyest dressers. And he had real silky, wavy hair. You know what I mean? He was just, it was Sham. So when you seen Sham, you was like, man, you was just in awe of his style of dress. You know what I mean?
So it's the four of you guys. When does RZA come into the picture?
RZA, well, let me tell you something, right?
Go ahead.
It's a funny situation because
I know
you gotta understand something. That's why in the book he called me the ambassador, right?
Right.
My family, my mother, had relationships with my brother's father. His name was Bess. He had a family down in Stapleton that was notorious crazy motherfuckers. I mean, like, these niggas was crazy. He had about four or five brothers, and these niggas was, you know, pardon me for not using the N-word, but these brothers was, you know, like I said, they would stab you, beat you up. It was notorious at Stapleton. So he used to take me down to Stapleton, my mother's boyfriend. And being that I used to be down there, you know, I'm not afraid to go out and play around. So I used to be out there. I used to be out there, dudes were playing basketball, and Ghost would be out there, you know, Dorian and To The Beat and Dondi and all these people. And RZA, I used to see RZA out there. And these are neighborhood kids. And I just got, you know, close to them. Plus, our school was junior high school 49 is right on the border of Park Hill and Stapleton. So
right.
That when we went to that school, that also opened me up to the kids in that neighborhood also. You know what I mean? So I was able to run into RZA one day. My man Tom was throwing a party. Well, not really a party. He brought his equipment out. That's what we used to do back in the days. Don't pull out equipment, plug it into the lamppost, right. And start cutting.
Right.
And bring out your crates of records. You know what I mean? And then RZA came through. You know, he seen us doing our little cut situation on, and he came out of nowhere. And I was like, whoa. Then he started talking. And I was immediately intrigued by him. You know what I'm saying? Because
why?
RZA always had a great mind. That's one thing I got to say. It's like, I was never the type of kid. I hated ignorant kids, like stupid kids. But when I ran into RZA, he was a breath of fresh air because he had a great mind. He was always talking about degrees and fascinating about the black culture. He was talking about the black man as the God, and he was just going in. You know what I mean? And I was in awe of this man because he was just different. You know what I mean? He was just mentally smart, you know what I mean? And I was like, yeah, that's what pulled me to him. And that's how I grew up. You know what I mean? I hated being around dumb motherfuckers. I used to love being around intelligent motherfuckers, you know what I'm saying? So he had me hook, line, and sinker from his mind. That's what I loved about him. To this day, that's what I like about him too. His mind is great.
When does the love and respect and encyclopedic knowledge of Kung Fu films become a defining aspect of
all right.
Where you guys went as Wu-Tang?
Hold on, let me say one thing. Back in those days, Kung Fu was everything for kids.
Oh, sure.
It used to come on Saturdays. It used to be on 42nd Street. They used to show the drunken master, the Kung Fu. Everything was Bruce Lee was really popping. And what drew us into that aspect was that we wanted to be masters. We wanted to be that old man who was no joke, who would just touch you and break your ribs. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
we wanted to be that old man. We wanted to be that dude. So that discipline and that training aspect, we kind of embraced it and wanted to apply it to what we was doing. So that's why we became Wu-Tang. Wu-Tang is an acronym for witty, unpredictable talent and natural game.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And this also has to do with the Wu. It's also, you know, Asian culture and the dynasty. It's a whole story behind it. But if you Google it, you'll be able to figure it out. You'll be able to see it for yourself. That's how we married it. You know what I'm saying? Then we you know, incorporated the Asian culture on top of that, with the street stuff and all that. And we just applied everything that we love. You know, we love the Kung Fu flicks. We love the street stuff. We love the gangster flicks. We, you know, even on the first record, we talk about the Killer Tape. That's a Kung Fu flick.
Yes.
But that's a gangster Kung Fu flick, though.
Yes.
I mean, and the reason why we used to talk about that is because every time you used to put down this damn seat, this tape, it'll go missing. Immediately. It's like, as soon as you finish watching it, where'd it go? Oh, the Killer Tape is missing. Somebody done buffed it, put it under your arm. You don't know where it went. It's like, yo, where my fucking Killer Tape? Dog, it was just right here 5 seconds ago. Where'd it go? Next thing you know, it'd be at Corey house. He got it. There's somebody steal it from him. That's how hot the Killer Tape was, you know?
Well, you started off, before you were You God, you started off as Golden Arm.
No, I didn't. RZA gave me that damn name. RZA gave me that name.
Well, I mean, he gave you
He gave me that name when I was locked up. I came home. You know what I mean? I started off, I was always U Guard, man. I've been U Guard since I was like 15, 16 years old. My graffiti name was Maine, M-A-N-E.
Right. Why did you pick U Guard as a name? I know that it has
My whole name is Universal.
Right.
That's what you used to call me, because I'm... When I apply myself to all aspects, I can literally, like, do everything. You know, I'm not saying I'm good at everything, but if I'm the type of person, I do my research, I look it up, I see what I got to do, and I can figure it out, and I fuck around and get it done. You know what I mean? I was able to do that in all aspects, you know what I mean? Even with school. That's why I was able to go to school, hustle, this, that, do that. It's like, damn, G, you all over the fucking place. Universal, baby. My name is Universal God Law.
Do you feel, though, that... Do you feel as if you were and are now a religious man?
Nah, I'm more spiritual than religious.
Okay.
I ain't into the books and quoting scriptures and all that.
No, no.
I just know that there's a force out there that governs this universe, and if you don't live by that shit, you get fucked up. I'm serious.
No.
You get fucked up. It's like if you don't wash your ass, you get shit start fucking happening. Shit starts stinking out there. That's governing universe. The universe is like that. You know, you don't wash that ass, your ass gonna stink and
it is.
And shit start happening, get sick and, you know, deteriorate, flesh start deteriorating. It's just, you know, there's laws out here that we gotta follow, you know.
As the Wu-Tang are gathering, how are you developing your flow?
Well,
how is it coming to you? How is it processing?
Well,
let me tell you
something. Right? In the beginning, on a scale of 100%, I was only 20% focused. The rest was street. I was in the streets just trying to, you know, survive and do all that stuff I was doing. I wasn't really superly focused. And then when I did decide to get focused, I had 8-9 dope MCs around me. Then I had to figure out...
Right.
I had to figure out who am I as a person. You know what I mean? So I had to go... I went back to the hood for a little while and just to find myself. And then I realized who I was. I said to myself, oh shit, I'm U-Guard, that street hustling little gangster, little motherfucker. That little boy that got beat up in the hood and that overcame all this. And now I'm gonna stick with that and I'm gonna write about that lane and that's where I'm gonna stay at. And that's where I have my epiphany. You know what I mean? I already was a dancer, so already rhythmically, I could always, you know, I can always just jump all over everything when it comes to like just rhythmic stuff. And but I had to find myself at one time that I had lost myself too.
It's funny that you mention, you know, you had 8 or 9 other guys around you to deal with. Did that make getting a verse or even a solo, which you had on Black Shampoo, you did your own thing.
Yeah, that was a crazy night.
Is that, what, I don't want to say what level of aggression, but how pushy did you have to be to get yourself heard within the Wu-Tang construct?
Well, pushy is an understatement. It's like...
I was going to get a little hard about it.
You had to just fit in that slot good. That's what it is. It's like many times the attempt to fit in... Because you only got 16 bars.
Sure.
Right? And you... Or between 16 and maybe 8 bars to get your shit off. So you got 16 bars, you got 3 people. So you hear a beat rocking, boom, 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 boom. You're like, oh yeah, I gotta get in there. Now you gotta come with your best. And at the time, when I came home from the prison, right, I wasn't at my best. So I got kicked out of the booth like 15 times. Literally. Niggas, y'all get the fuck out.
You're still on protection.
Dirty used to crack on me hard.
How's
He's
that?
Like, fucking shit is whack, God. I mean, he used to hit the button on me. Fucking shit is whack, God. I just be like, get the fuck out the booth, man. I just be like, fuck you, nigga. And come back. Don't think I'm giving up, motherfucker. So I just come back. And then I got hit. You know, I got banged out like 15, 16 times. I had to come back. And on that 16th try, that's when I laid down with the wars. And that's when I was like, I got that slot. I was like, yeah, that's my slot. Strong arm that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Then after that, some of the chains shook off. Now I was able to get in my slot every time now. You know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, I can rhyme on a level. Now I got on the level. It took me a little time to get my shake the rust off, but once I got my slot in, once I get that 16 in, you ain't kicking me off that beat now. You know what I mean? And I had to work for that.
Protect Your Neck came out of the box and it was a pretty big record, like from the start.
Yeah.
How did... And this question will make more sense in a few minutes. But how did success change you guys? Could you feel it immediately?
At the time of Protecting Neck, we wasn't feeling successful. We was just feeling like we was just doing what we had to do. Ralph McDaniels was playing our music video. Our music video was rocking. Now my mans and them was calling me from Brooklyn, and my peoples was in jail, was like, yo, what the fuck's going on out there? And I was like, yo, it's yo, that Protect Your Neck joint, yo, that's yo. Yo. Swinging through my town like neighborhood spider, man. That's what they kept singing, deck verse. You know what I'm saying? So they was like, yo, you know, and I was like, yo, you know, it's getting ready to be on. And for the people I was telling them about my crew, because I spent a lot of time, you know, going uptown and going to Bronx, going to Brooklyn, just saying Wu-Tang. And then when they finally heard it, they was like, yo, God, you was talking about these dudes, man. You was talking about this shit for a long time. What's going on? I was like, yeah, it's about to pop off. And sure enough, you know, that's what happened.
One of the most notable aspects of the Wu-Tang Clan is that they, very early on, people started doing their solo thing.
Well,
you waited
a
while.
If you have that much people in one circle, you got to let them breathe. You got to let them just release all that what they have in them. It ain't good to keep that many people bowed up because it'd have fucked around and been a crazy catastrophe. You know what I'm saying? It's just too much talent in one spot.
So why did you wait? You were like the seventh or eighth guy.
My situation was different because after, you know, the first wave of records came out, you know, dudes was more busy than usual. Then when it came time for my record, I didn't get no love. I didn't get that much focus. Same thing with me, Deck, and Master Killer. We didn't get that love like the first dudes had on the first wave records. You know what I'm saying? So I had to go in the studio. Believe it or not, I was in the studio figuring it out myself. Punching in, doing all stuff. I had to learn all that by myself. And you ever seen a studio? You ever seen a mix board before?
Oh, sure.
When you first look at it, it's like, oh, shit, it's like rocket scientists. How the fuck am I going to do this shit? You feel like you got to be a brain scientist to figure this shit out. But after a while, once we pressing the keys, start messing with the buttons, I said, oh, shit, this shit is simple. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I had to learn on my own. Was nobody teaching me nothing. You know what I mean? So time went on. I got better at that, though. I started learning more and more about beats, about how to break down beats from the snare and the drums and all that stuff and bring it from that and how to place my vocal inside between, how to move it over a slight bit to make it hit on the one instead of the you know what I mean?
Right.
Just those little tricks I had to learn on my own. And I'm grateful for that, you know what I mean? Because I'm grateful for the fact some I had to learn on my own, but at the same time, I wouldn't mind having a teacher neither, you know what I mean? But it didn't work out like that, so I had to just figure it out on my own.
You have a new album coming out, Venom, what?
30th of March.
Is it fair to say then that you're
I'm
pretty
dangerous
much
now.
It's all you?
I'm fucking dangerous right now. It's ridiculous. Forget about it, bro. Forget about it. It's like I can go in the studio right now. You be like, damn, this nigga Dr. Dre or some shit. You know what I mean? For real, it's like it's different now, you know?
How do you believe? Because obviously, hip hop records are a fairly well guarded secret until release date, for the most part. So I have not yet heard it.
Yes.
Can you tell me, as a solo artist, having nothing to do with the Wu-Tang,
yes.
How do you believe you've developed up until this point? What is the greatest lyrical and sonic difference on Venom than, say, your first?
My clarity. Like the
clarity of thought?
The clarity of, no, of wordplay.
Word?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the clarity of wordplay and knowing how to separate them. See, as a musician, you have to be, the artist has to be in the middle.
Yes.
While the music has to play around. If you listen to Michael Jackson's stuff, he has a perfect fucking sonic. He has the best producers ever to do his shit. And his vocal doesn't override the music.
No,
nor does the music override him. It's placed in perfect balance, you know what I'm saying? And it's just, that's what I had to learn how to do, being able to just structure your vocal like that, where the music doesn't overpower you and you don't overpower the music. And it's also that you also glide into it and ride into it. And every word has sting to it too. I had to learn how to do that too. Like every word have sting to it, you know? Crack a chest like one of the best now. Feel the force of the full core. Press our plot, a kiss of death. Something for real, the realness. Untouchable Elliot Ness. Select a vet, take me off the bench. I supposed to lynch. You know what I'm saying? So you gotta like try to hit them with, every time you try to hit them with words that sting. You know what I mean? So.
I wanna stay with modern day hip hop for a second.
Yeah.
Do you feel Or how do you feel artists who aren't children in hip hop? Because you're an adult.
Yes.
What level?
I'm gonna have some fun though. You're not gonna make me an old.
No, no, I'm not making you an old man at all.
That's one thing I'm gonna do. I'm gonna keep young and hard.
You feel as if labels understand how to market hip hop artists who aren't under 25, who aren't Migos, who
all right.
aren't.
You know what the problem with it is? The older rappers stop making music.
Yes, they did. This is my greatest complaint about all older artists.
And I talked to Rakim, and I see him talking, getting mad about the youngins and all that stuff. I was like, yo, Ra, I ain't heard a freestyle from you in like 30 years,
right?
Dog. What the fuck? You can't be beefing with these youngins like that. You got to go. Give me something. Slick Rick, where you at? It's like, yo, come on. What happened? Why you stop breaking joints? But that's the problem. And that's why people always say, oh, hip-hop's for the youngsters. Nah, B, if you keep writing and you keep putting out music,
exactly,
you can stay relevant into this day's environment. People are always going to love their heroes, you know what I mean? And that's just what it is. And if you come with some good shit, too, on top of it, that's more icing on the cake, you know what I mean? It's sweeter, you know? It's cherry on top. It's good.
Yeah, this is my theory about all music. If
yeah, look, Johnny Cash didn't stop making...
Exactly.
He was 75 and still dropping shit.
Once you stop, you die.
Yeah. But I was amazed at Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
75 is still coming with stankers. I was like, this man is insane. I was like, you heard his last album?
Yeah, of course.
This shit was crazy. This shit was insane.
Let's duck back to the relationship with the Wu-Tang. When... look, every band that's or rap act that stays together for a while, things change. When do you believe and you write about this in the book, when do you believe the membership of the Wu-Tang Clan began to splinter as people?
Well, we never splintered. You gotta understand something, right? Right now, we got about 10 shows for this year. We went on tour constantly for the last 20-some years.
Yeah.
Now, the crazy thing about it being a family, because that's where we are first, right?
Right.
It's crazy, because you're going to have your drunk uncle. you're gonna have your cousin who think he know everything.
Okay.
You're gonna have the crazy one who don't do shit, sit in the corner, don't say nothing. You know, it's just how the families are. But at the same time, you're gonna love them for what it is. Now, 9 brothers, they've been together for 20-some years, is an astounding feat in its own. Because you got rock groups running out for, what, 2-3 years and can't keep it together?
Right.
4 people? Wu-Tang been together for 20-something years. So when people sit back and say, when it's splintering off, don't get it twisted. When we go off and do our own thing, we come back. We see each other. Because we just love each other. Like, I love performing with my brothers. That's like the highlight of my fucking year sometimes. You know, just seeing my brothers rock out. And we grooving to our music and we doing our thing. And you know what I mean? Now, as far as the business side, that's a totally different situation.
Okay, because I was going to mention.
That's what happened, really, because we came in the game, we was 22 years old.
Sure.
Now, when you hit 30s and 40s, you start wearing like, yo, hold up, man. I'm on 250 songs. What's going on here, Pimpin? What's going on? We got to figure this out. And that's what happened, you know what I mean? And that'll change the whole demographic when you start realizing the business part of it, you know what I mean? And that took place. And how can I say this? It was an awakening to the point where you can't get mad, but then you kind of mad. Like, okay, you start figuring out things like you didn't know before. Like, oh, why you ain't telling me this?
Right.
You know what I mean? But you can't get mad. It's business. You know what I mean? At the end of the day. So that's basically come with some of the stuff we had to overcome.
So the lawsuit then did not affect the performing end of Wu-Tang.
I've been in lawsuit. Me and Riz have been in court 3 times already. I'm going to check the motherfucking books. I don't give a fuck what nobody says.
That's funny.
For some apparent reason, let me tell you some real shit, right? They got a team of people that sit there and stalk the lawyers. Like, you can go for just a regular audit, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Sure.
As a business, you want to see what's going on, what we saw, what we lost. Were we in the red? What we did? We want to see what's going on. And the only way you can do that, I can't put a gun to your head and do that. I ain't in the streets no more. So, yo, give me my money. I can't do that. I got to go get my lawyer, who's a Jew. And then the Jew got to go next to another Jew, and they both have Jewish talks. They're going to have talks. We go talk about the situation, do the channels of that. You know what I'm saying? And then we sit there and we figure it out. And we hound it out. And he sit back. We come back. Like, yo, okay, the record show, we in the red on this. We, you know, okay. But for me to do that, I gotta put out some paperwork. And TMZ got nose sniffers all over the damn place. Soon as you put something out, they jumping on like dogs on shit, like flies on shit. They jumping on anything. So I'm like, wow, what the fuck? That's not even what I was doing. I was coming in for a regular audit to see what's going on with the paperwork, B. They made it seem like I'm suing the whole clan. I looked on the news like, get the fuck out of here. I'm suing the whole clan now. Man, come on. The media needs something to talk about, you know, perpetuate views and shit. So it is what it is, man.
You've got Venom coming out this year, the Wu-Tang recorded in 2014 and 2016. Is there a projected next record that
you like talking like that. See, you talking to the wrong person.
Gotta talk.
I just want to bust in your head. I don't like telling people I'm coming. I don't. That's one of the things just I don't. Like, I have beef with RZA with that shit all the time. Yo, we getting ready to do this. You don't tell people you're coming. You just drop some fucking hot shit saying, yeah, we coming now.
Okay, you know I buy that.
Because you put yourself under pressure. You put yourself in a pressure situation where you're getting ready to rock this album. Next thing you know, you're in a studio fucking constipated.
Yeah.
Because you can't. Because you've told everybody some shit, and next thing you know, the walls is closing in on you. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather just create freely, and yo, don't let nobody know we in the studio, dog. We just be doing what we gotta do, and then we don't want nobody knowing. Then next thing you know, we hit you with a couple of stinkers, like, yo, the Wu was back. Yeah, motherfucker, we back. That's how you gotta do it. You know what I mean? And sooner or later, he'll get the logist of it, because that's how I move.
Yeah. I want to stick with RZA for 1 second.
Yeah.
And I want to ask a couple fun questions. What do you know, you've branched out, you've written an autobiography. And in fact, you know what, before I ask you the RZA question, when did you decide, oh, this is a good time to write my own, you know, my life story? And was there a model?
I started in 2010 with the book. Pieces and bits.
Right.
Pieces and bits.
Because you announced it in 2017
Pieces and bits. Pieces and bits. Pieces and bits. And I had paragraphs here, themes, what I was going to talk about, what I was going to say this, how I was going to remember this, remember that. So I had all these things together. Now, one day I'm sitting there getting high. My people's in the studio. We drinking, smoking. And I started telling them stories about, you know, how we grew up and all this crazy shit. Motherfuckers sitting there like this. In awe.
Yeah, you're a very natural storyteller.
Yeah, it was in awe. Like, get the fuck out of here. I was like, yeah, it was rough. It was crazy. So my manager saw that. She was like, yo, dog, it's time for you to tell this fucking story, man. You know what I mean? It's time for you to lay this shit down. Let them niggas know. Let them motherfuckers know what happened, how it really was going down with you in this world. Now, as far as a storyteller, if I see, you know, a bird takes off, we both watch the bird take off.
Right.
You're going to say the bird flew right. I'm going to say the bird flew left. That's just how people are. You know what I'm saying? But this is my story, how I saw it, though. You know what I'm saying? And how I was raised and how I felt it went down. Somebody else come along, nah, you go, man, it didn't go like that. It went like this. That's, you know, they're going to tell his story. But this is my story. And it took me 2.5 years to pen it together and go through it and highlight it and run on sentences and corrections and this and chopping it down. It was 400 pages at once. So I had to chop it down to 297.
Wow. Okay. You know? Now, you've branched out as an author, what is your take on RZA branching out as a film director?
He always branches the fuck out, man.
It's true. I know.
I get upset with him sometimes, man. I'm like, yo, dog, you got too many branches, man. You got to come back. Hollywood got you crazy. Get your ass back here, man. Get your back ass back over here. You know what I'm saying? But he know how I get there. I give it to him with both barrels, man. I don't give a fuck, man. I'm like, yo, man, you fucking up, B.
You talk a little bit about Mike Tyson.
Oh, man.
Perhaps being
My mother, because Mike Tyson is from the same hood in Brownsville. And Pickens Avenue back in those days was a notorious spot for thievery.
Right.
Thievery. Serious. Back then, you couldn't sit by the door without, if it was open, your pocketbook was getting snatched, your glasses was coming off your face, right. Your chain was coming off. Any type of thing, anything that glittered or whatever was coming with somebody was trying to get that back in those days. And one day we was walking out, coming from my grandmother's house, and we made that right turn on Picking to get, go catch the bus like we always do, right across the street from the OTB. And sitting there waiting for the bus. And before she got on the bus, this motherfucker came in and just ripped her fucking earrings right out of her goddamn ears. Now, she didn't have the ones to clip on. She had the real ones, right. The ones you got in your ears. So her lobe was leaking and all that shit. And, time went on, whatever. Years later down the line, she seen Mike Tyson on TV. And she said, "That's that bulldog motherfucker right there that ripped my goddamn earrings out my ears." She was like, "I cannot fucking believe this shit." And she was like, I think that, yes, that's him. And then he gets on TV. He's talking about how he used to be robbing on Picking Avenue.
Right.
So I was like, this motherfucker right here. But you know what I'm saying? That's just how it was growing up. You know what I mean? Brownsville, that's how it was. You know what I'm saying? He was talking about how he used to rob and then go up to Custom Model's house and hide from the cops and stuff like that. So that's how it was back in there. But that's how New York was.
Sure. Let's talk about modern day thieves. Martin Shkreli.
Oh, sweet.
How does he become part? What's your take on this guy? Because
I don't even know. He came out of nowhere,
right?
Like Gilligan. I don't know who the fuck this dude is.
Gilligan,
fucking Gilligan, man. I don't know. He just came out of nowhere. His chest all poked out. I'm like, man, I just want to punch him. He got one of the faces. Just want to punch in the face.
I completely agree with that.
You know some people that like that. It's just, you got a face. You just want to punch in the face. He got one of those faces, but I wouldn't do that. So he got his hands on the record. How he got his hands on it, he put up money for it. First, Leonardo DiCaprio was going to buy it.
I know.
You know what I mean? And then he came in and bought it. So I'm like, he also bought Lil Wayne's record. So I'm like, damn. I'm like, then, we didn't get no money off that shit. So that's the situation. I'm in court right now. So now the feds got it. Now I got to sit in front of Mueller, right? And these motherfuckers.
That's it.
For my fucking
it's you guys and Trump got to sit in front of Mueller.
I got to sit in front of Mueller.
That's fucked up, right?
And Mueller, I can tell Mueller like us. Mueller loves us, though. I can tell he loves us, though. I don't know why, for some apparent reason, I just think Mueller really likes us. That's why he bought the record. He said, "Oh, get that Wu record. I want to see these guys. I want to meet these guys. These guys is fucking crazy."
I got the signal that I have one last question, and I'm going to make it about Philly. And I'll tell you why, because Philadelphia has... in the Wu-Tang legacy.
Oh, let me tell you something.
From it's where
our records got broke in Philly.
Yes, they did.
First, that was the first city to like accept us. Besides New York, our hometown.
Right.
Philly is the second, the most, our second market of popularity. Without Philadelphia, we wouldn't even perpetuate it the way we went to. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I said, G, where he at? Where my man G at? G right there, he was a part of our promotional team back in the days. Yo, he was G. The one that waved the flag. He I bear witness to him. He was the one that drove around in vans and did all the footwork and did all the shit that motherfuckers behind the scenes don't even know nothing about. You know what I mean? And he was like he was that dude, man, for our Philly Connect. And he did a marvelous job. You know what I mean?
Hats off to you, Jay.
You know what I mean? And to this day, when he came in, I was like, G, see me? He said, soon as I seen him, I said, G. You know, it's like, I can't never.
First one to play Protect
the
Neck on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a man. He was definitely broke markets.
Very cool.
For us, man, so.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I got that in because Philadelphia has always had a thing for Wu-Tang Clan, so.
Yes, we love it.
We're going to open the questions to the audience, if anybody wants to.
Peace, Scott.
Peace.
Hi. So I wanted to just congratulate you on your book.
Yes, ma'am.
And I have it, so I'm ready to read it. I didn't get a chance yet. Back in like maybe 96, I got a chance to meet RZA up at Harriet Tubman Elementary School at the Show Improve.
Yes.
Yeah, so I do have knowledge of self. Another thing I want to ask you, whatever happened to, there's three people I was concerned about. Old Man Wu, Grave Diggers, and King Juss.
King Juss, between me and you, what happened with King? See, King Juss' situation was kind of weird. Because he was linked up with some notorious people on the island. And Jermaine Dupri wanted to buy him. But these you know, these thuggins, they didn't want to give him up. You know what I'm saying? So it kind of ruined his career a little bit. Then later on, he caught a, I think he caught a rape charge or something like that. And yeah, he just went crazy a little bit. He's out there, you know, doing his little toodaloo-loo. Now, grave diggers, I don't know. I see Fuquan every now and again. You know what I mean? Prince Paul, you know, I try to get some beats off him. Weirdo shit took place. I don't know what the fuck happened. Now the other dude, you say, what's his name? I forgot. I don't even know what his face. I can't remember his face, my lady. So, you know what I mean? But that's what I can say about King Just, man. He was like, Adrian was like with us. We used to rhyme in circles together. Because we used to be, like I said, we used to be me, Ray, Meff, Kappa, Deck, King Just, Star Child, RZ, and Choice. And we used to all be in the hallways together, beatboxing and rhyming together. And, you know, when he got his deal, we was happy because it was the start of the revolution on Staten Island and stuff like that. And after that, he wasn't able to come back. You know.
Hello, thanks for coming to Philly.
Yes.
Sending you some Philly love from everybody here.
Yes, yes.
And thanks for sharing your story with us, because storytelling is super important. For those of us that grew up in the 90s, I think a lot of us recognize that 90s, early 2000s hip hop is really distinct. And it was more focused on storytelling and poetry and, you know, people's personal experiences from the streets. And some people attribute the shift in hip hop to what it is now is pressure from record companies, you know, telling artists to change their lyrics. Is there any truth to that? And if not, what do you attribute
what shift? Happened? You know what happened? We, as black males in the industry, got smart. We wanted our publishing. We wanted all our royalties. We was merchandising. We was enterprising. You know, see what Jay-Z and Puffy was doing, all that stuff. Everybody wanted to be entrepreneurs. We got too smart. So what they had to go do? They had to go give contracts to dumb motherfuckers down over there that'll sign anything. And then that's what caused the shift. So because now you got 360 deals. You know what I mean? You got all these other deals.
Yeah.
And dudes that take percentage of your show and this, that, and that. I'm not disrespecting any deals, but dudes are signing some terrible fucking deals. Pardon me, it's terrible deals. But New York got too smart, and they had to go make money. These companies got to make money. It's about keeping those lights on in those buildings, and they wasn't getting anything like that. So they had the records shift. It shifted, and that's what happened. I mean, and that's where we are today. You know what I mean? And the music, it comes around, though. Everything goes in circles. You know what I mean? So. You'll see.
I also think it's down to the fact that younger people
will sign anything,
and they are a little bit more of a consumerist culture than you guys were coming up. You guys
we was consumers.
Well, you were consumers, but you weren't. You know, you didn't live and die by it. You had the things you loved, but kids now, see, that just makes me sound a million years old, but your kids now, I believe, are so wrapped up in games, in phones. That's it. That's their lives. That wasn't only...
No, that wasn't our era. We was a CD era.
Right.
We sold a lot. We was the first group to really sell gold CDs. We broke that open, like, when CDs was really hot. And then the transfer from MP3s, and now it's streaming. You know what I mean? But still the same thing. You know, they still sign and give you these whack ass deals.
Yeah,
you know?
they're horrible deals.
It's just horrible fucking deals. So, but you can't do that with New York dudes. Like, you know, like Jada and Wu and like I said, Biggie and all the rest of these dudes. We had certain deals structured where we was getting ours. And, you know, companies wasn't, after a while, it was like, they couldn't live off that. You know what I mean? They couldn't survive. So it just caused a shift, that's all.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, how you doing?
How you doing, boss?
You go looking around this room and you say, who else in this room grew up in the projects? And you would never pick me. So I want to ask you about cultural appropriation.
Yes.
Now, my attitude toward music is that if I hear music and I can't sing it, or I can't dance to it, I don't want any parts of it. You can have it. So if it reaches me, it touches me, I want to say it's mine. And if you want to tell me it's not mine because of, you look at my skin ain't right, you know, go fuck yourself.
Well,
it's how
who,
I feel.
Who said that?
I'm not saying it to you. Of course not. But I've been told that a million times, and I'm like, tired. I mean, come on. You know, there are people like me who hear black folk, and we love it.
You sound like you got a bunch of haters around you.
Yeah, tell me about it. I got it.
You sound like you got a haters.
You need some new friends.
Yeah.
You definitely need some new friends.
It's just like me. I be blasting Nirvana. Motherfuckers think I'm fucking crazy. Like, like, they can't picture that. You hip-hop is a motherfucker. No, don't worry about those people, man. You just keep doing what you gonna do. And I don't know, people are strange nowadays. It's like, you can't have no fun outside your culture without somebody having an opinion. You can't date this person, or you can't do this, or everything's tribal, or everything. I'm like, Jesus Christ, America's like, oh my goodness. It's a terrible time for America, people. I'm sorry.
Yo,
the media has got us fucking twisted.
It's not my fault.
Every day, the president's on TV. If you say his name, your stock plummet. Your people don't want to buy your shit no more. I have never seen carnage like this in my life. I've been 45 years on this planet, and this is the most strangest time ever in United States history. I'm sorry. And I don't know how, you know, this is black and white. This is everybody. Everybody's looking at it like cock eyes, like, what the fuck is going on now? And how long is this gonna last? Or is it gonna change? Is it gonna get worse? Is it? We don't know. We just gotta keep going. And then the people's mentality is crazy too. Like you said, people are hating on you because you feel like that's your music. You know what? Like I said, fuck them, man. Don't worry about them people, man. You gotta just put blinders on and then turn it up louder. Like, I'm turning it up loud on you, bro. I don't want to hear you. Matter of fact, and dance and have your fun in the sunshine, man, because we only got one life, man. And if it makes you feel good, you know, that's why I say make it happen, baby.
Good evening, brother.
Peace. As-salamu alaykum. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salamu alaykum. Two questions and a comment. First off is growing up listening to Wu-Tang, N.W.A., and all these other hip-hop artists, and it's kind of odd when you see My Ice Cube at Are We Done Yet? It's kind of funny seeing that, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you was the nigga that we love to hate. Now you smiling, so it's kind of odd, but I love it. So the question is, why don't these old school or my old school hip hop artists just lyrically strong arm the game back? Why are we allowing these youths to come in and just say words or half of words? And we just sit back and we just allow this to happen. And,
all right,
and
see, then you sound like Raw right now.
I mean,
you sound just like Raw.
No, but I mean, seriously, like, okay, like, get off the stage. You know what I mean? It's like, I remember on the 36 album, on the 36 Chambers, where there's like all the Wu-Tang will say that we will come and take your microphone off the stage in a sort of sense. Just get off the stage. Okay, what happened to that? And then
all right. You get older. You know you get older, right?
Well, yeah. Because I'm saying, yo, brother, you got me about 3 years, so I agree.
It happens.
My back can't take that no more. But the second part is, being that we have such a problem in our community.
With what? Everything, huh?
Well, yeah, everything. And we have such a problem in America right now. Why can't we just strong arm that back? Why don't we just start pumping in that the righteousness that I heard on the 36 and the Triumph album? You know what I mean? I remember here, that's all you need to buy. I mean, this Wu-Tang album, that's all you need right there. Hey, I remember that verse. What happened to that? We need to take that back, brother.
You know what, man? One thing I gotta say about the youth, they having fun though, B. That's one thing I cannot say nothing about what the youth is doing, because at the same time, I kinda like the shit. I ain't gonna front. You know what I mean? They ain't as lyrical as we are. You know, they ain't gonna go. They ain't went through the same things we do. Cause you understand something. When we rhyme from a place where it will never be the same again. You know what I mean? And that era's gone. You know what I mean? Just like James Brown and Michael and all those people that came in, era's gone. But their music still lasts. But the youngins are gonna come with their own style. And if you listen, it's kind of hot. You know what I mean? For their new style. If it is, if you listen, if you can open your ears to it. You know what I'm saying? As a musician, I had to adapt to that. Now, for us coming back to take back all that stuff you're talking about, beats play a part, production play a part. to get that type of music back in our chamber, it's gonna take a lot of work. Because remember, it's nine of us. And for us to flood it again, we need dope music. And it's hard to find that. That's one of the hardest things to get in the music industry, is good production. You know what I mean? Once you get good beats, you gotta hold on to that shit like, you know, like it's the last bad woman on the planet Earth, man. Like, oh man, it's gotta get that music. And that's one of the reasons why our stuff shifted a little bit, because you can have so many beats and you run out. And then you gotta get it, you gotta try to get it back, get some good music back in. And it takes a while to get good music, man. You know what I mean? And then by that time, years done passed and, you know, trends done changed and all that.
Yeah, that's trends,
you know, I mean?
Change.
So, but if we can get that music back, you know, a nice good flood of music to rhyme to, we be back smashing you in the head tomorrow, baby. You know what I mean? So the rhymes ain't never going nowhere. It's just, like I said, it's the music, man. It's hard to get that, man, you know? Especially that good stuff. I know the stuff you like, the stuff that you like. It's hard to get. Now everything sounds the same. It's 808s and drums and repetitive. I'm gonna get you. You know, it's repetitive stuff like that. I get it. You know what I mean? But, you know, things change, man. You know, but we can, like I said, we just need that music, man. It's hard to get it, man. Little man, what's up? You know I got messages, little mans.
You said you started young at 22, right?
Started what? I started a lot young. What are you talking about in particular?
Well, how exactly young were you?
Doing what, though?
Rapping.
I wrote my first rhyme at 16.
Okay, well, I'm only 10, and I've started 2 years ago.
Well, you came at a point where hip-hop is popular like that, and it's more global,
yeah,
and more acceptable. When I was young, they didn't know what the hell I was doing. My mother used to look at me. I used to have pounds of papers and all that. She's like, what you writing? I used to be like, rap music. She'd be like, she used to laugh at me and shit. You know what I'm saying? So I'm glad you started early. All I'm going to say to you is stay with it. Study it. But you got to study the dudes that came before you, though. If you study the dudes that come before you, you're going to be doper than all these little dudes coming out as you get older.
I have one last question.
Yeah.
Is it okay if I share a little something that I wrote?
Yes.
Give me some. Give me some, baby. Give me some.
Okay. All right. I'm an all-A student. No C's, no B's, no D's. They just hating on me because I got the keys. I'm in school. My mom is my queen. My dad is my king. Kodak Black said he got a Jesus piece, but there's no reason telling the guy he sees. So I know that I'm gonna keep rhyming, grinding, and I'm gonna keep going, cause I got the keys to the street, and that's real.
Yeah, that's right. That's good stuff, dude. That's right.
With that, I want to thank you, God, for coming to Philadelphia.
Mr. Philadelphia.
In such inclement weather.
Yes, sir. Yes, yes.
I'm ADM Rossi. Thanks for coming to the Free Library. Good night.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at Free Library.